Madden Monday for this week. Tim Benz, Mark Madden. You can listen to Mark Monday through Friday on 105.9 The X. You can also read him four times a week at Trib Live. And we are coming to you on a Monday morning in advance of a Steelers Monday night game against the Indianapolis Colts. A game, Mark, that to me, because the Steelers' playoff hopes are shot, whether or not they're mathematically eliminated, they're over. A game to me that has one storyline and one storyline really of consequence that matters, and that's Mike Tomlin against Jeff Saturday. If Mike Tomlin loses to Jeff Saturday on Monday night, that's the only thing we should be talking about come Tuesday morning.
Yeah, it's obviously a small sample. It's just one game. You're talking about a presumed Hall of Fame coach in Mike Tomlin against a rank amateur. And I know Jeff Saturday was an accomplished offensive lineman in the NFL, but his only coaching experience was, you know, some Catholic prep school or whatever it was, where he was under 500. So, you know, he shouldn't have got the job. Even if he does okay, it doesn't mean he should have got the job. It could be a fluke, and it would serve the Colts right if Saturday did well enough during his interim stint this season where they hired him next year. And, you know, things like having to run the offseason and having to run a training camp, having to help in roster assembly. I mean, you know, that's when being an inexperienced amateur bad coach really blows up, not necessarily when you get plopped in the middle of a season. But as far as Tomlin goes, yeah, if he loses this game, he's got some splaining to do. That said, I don't think the Colts are that bad. I mean, I don't think they're worse than the Steelers, do you?
I think they're about the same. It's a 2.5-point spread. That feels about right to me. I look at the desperation with which Tomlin should be approaching this game, and hopefully that permeates the team and permeates his approach to the game. I just know this. If they lose and Tuesday morning rolls around, I'm not going to be looking at Matt Canada and what he did and didn't do. I'm not going to be looking at Kenny Pickett's shortcomings or a defense that's disappointing. I'm going to be looking at Mike Tomlin and what he did or didn't do, and him as the reason why his Steelers couldn't beat a team that's as sub-mediocre as they are and do it on a Monday night stage where Tomlin normally thrives. That's going to be on him.
Well, if this finally causes Tomlin to get some sort of blame, I'm all for it. But I think the blame should have trickled down to him long since. I think the overriding story for the Steelers for the rest of this year is, will Kenny Pickett get any better? Because so far he has not. No matter what anybody says, he has not improved even a little bit, and I'm tired of hearing about his competitive fire. Don't give me intangibles. That's just deflection away from him playing horribly to date. And there's already people saying, boy, if C.J. Stroud's available when the Steelers pick next year, maybe they should take him. I wouldn't go that far. I don't think they can. I think they have to be committed to Pickett and at long last get some help at, oh, gee, I don't know, defensive line, offensive line, cornerback. The Steelers have so many problems, so many holes to fill in that roster. But that's the other big story, and it goes past merely the game against the Colts. Will Pickett get any better? Because it's too early to say he's a bust. It's not too early to think that that's possible.
You said it on Twitter, Mark, and I agree that it's so odd for a Steelers game to be happening in November that doesn't count. I believe this is just the fourth time since 1970 where the Steelers are 3-7 or worse after 10 games. So that should be a reflection of Tomlin, as should be, to your point previously, well, not just the shortcomings of this year, but every year since 2016 when they haven't won a playoff game. And I do think, especially on a national level, he has skirted blame for that. But I think he's taking this game pretty seriously, too. I think this hire bothers him, maybe not as much as it bothered, say, for instance, Bill Cowher, but he was asked about it in his Tuesday press conference, and he had every opportunity on his stage to say, it's not that big of a deal. You guys in the media are making too much of this. I get it. I understand why Saturday was hired. He didn't. He gave it the, I know Jeff, I like Jeff preamble, which everybody who has had a problem with the hire has said before they say that they have a problem with the hire. It's just that Tomlin didn't do that last part.
Yeah, and what Saturday's mostly done with Indy since taking over is play it safe. For example, he reinstated Matt Ryan at quarterback, you know, to get a steady veteran hand in there. So I think Saturday's really taken the team back to basics. At least that's the approach from a distance. And really, to beat the Steelers, all you have to do is master the basics.
With the Colts, that basic is just run Jonathan Taylor. I will say this, Mark, that one thing the Steelers have done pretty well for the last month or so is contain the run after that was a bleed-over problem to start the year from 2021.
Yeah, they've done okay in that regard. I think that's mostly due to Miles Jack. I don't want to put it on, you know, just one guy. And I think Ogunjobi's helped, even though he's primarily a pass rusher from defensive end. He's done okay in the Steelers 3-4, but I just don't think it does much good to stop their run normally because it's not a running league. It's by so far a passing league. That's why the Steelers model is outdated, Tim. They think if you possess the ball and play defense, you can still win. Well, they neither possess the ball nor play defense, but I see what they're trying to do anyway. But the Colts do have, I mean, Taylor might be the best running back in football, so yeah, it don't take many points to beat the Steelers. So maybe you can run the ball effectively, and that'll be enough to beat them.
Back to your picket point, Mark. We know in the NFL it's a very hair-trigger business. We know in the NFL there's not a lot of patience to be had. So when it comes to his development for next year, does the Pitt thing, does the apologist segment of the media and the fan base thing actually potentially benefit the Steelers, that they'll almost be a forced patience for Pickett, say, for instance, like we're seeing in Jacksonville for Trevor Lawrence, where there was forced patience because of where he was drafted number one overall?
Well, I think there's a forced patience just because you have no other options, Tim. I mean, there's no other option than Jacksonville either. What are they going to do if they don't play Trevor Lawrence?
Oh, right. And I think Trevor Lawrence has a higher ceiling. And if I made it sound like I was comparing the two men as peers in terms of their talent, I'm not.
No, but the situations are similar. I mean, Pickett's nowhere near Trevor Lawrence, but the Jags, you know, made a commitment to Lawrence with that pick, and the Steelers made a similar commitment to Pickett with that pick, if only because they have so many other issues to address with the picks coming up in future drafts.
What of those issues to you is the most concerning right now? I think for me, it's the lack of a shutdown corner. Then again, I feel like the Steelers have always played with the lack of a shutdown corner.
Yeah, but the league has evolved to where the shutdown corner now is necessary. Look what Sauce Gardner's done to the New York Jets. He is the single biggest reason they've made that jump. You know, from bums to, what are they now, 7-4, and they're probably going to make the playoffs. So, and one thing should be noted as well. I don't think you take the best corner available when the Steelers pick if there's a better, say, you know, tackle, you know, defensive end, whatever. But if you get the one shutdown corner, that solves a problem, period. Whereas if you just get one good offensive lineman or one good defensive lineman, that doesn't necessarily solve the problem you have there.
As the week went along, Mark, what sort of interpretation did you have? Did your opinion evolve at all about what Jermaine Pratt said about the Steelers and their predictability on offense?
Yeah, I think they just stink on offense. And I think when you stink, you tend to do the same thing over and over again because you're scared, and scared produces simple.
I got the impression that a lot of people were trying to poo-poo those comments by way of just, it's the Bengals and we don't want to give them any credit for anything, at least around here in the Pittsburgh media, by saying, well, okay, then how come the Bengals weren't doing a better job in the second half, or the first half, excuse me. But if you look at the quote from Pratt, he actually was kind of blaming himself and blaming the defense for not doing better in the first half for the reasons he pointed out. If you look at the whole quote, he's basically saying, we should have done better early because we knew what was coming.
Well, don't get me wrong. I think he's right. But, you know, the Steelers, you know, have the resources to finger paint. They're not going to turn out a Rembrandt.
And I think that's evident in their, frankly, their lack of skill position pop. And that's become extremely evident by the diminishing returns on Deontay Johnson already in year one since his extension.
And by the way, we ignored a lot that happened in that Bengals game. For example, Lyle Collins put T.J. Watt in his back pocket. I mean, made T.J. Watt invisible, and T.J. Watt has half a sack in two games since coming back. I mean, you got to do better than that. He had the great interception, I know, but still.
And he called him out for whining to the refs. And there's another thing, Mark, where, you know, I asked Mike Tomlin about Watt and how he's been playing, and he was largely complimentary of Watt, but I did ask it with the caveat of seeing extreme blocking schemes to slow him down and holding that can't be called all the time by the officials. And it's not like Tomlin, again, the absence of what he said was probably more direct than what he actually said on paper, but it's not like he refuted the suggestion. All he talked about was how he gave him cut-ups of great pass rushers of days gone by and made him watch the trash that they had to fight through, be it intricate blocking schemes or lots of holding.
Yeah, Tim, I'm not really concerned about any of that. The world doesn't want to hear about the labor pains. It only wants to see the baby. T.J. Watt is the highest-paid edge rusher in football, correct? He got that huge contract, correct?
Yeah.
Well, then produce. I don't care what you have to go through. I don't want to hear you whine. I certainly don't want to see Lael Collins put you in his back pocket. Just produce.
Anything else of note, Mark, that you took away from this week of football, going back to the Thanksgiving Day night games? I thought it was kind of funny how the Patriots lost a game in part because of what was largely a Jesse James-type play.
Yeah, but that was clearly not a catch. That was even more obviously not a catch than the Jesse James call. I almost said Jesse Jane after the adult film star there for a second. I watched a lot of football on Thanksgiving because I thought all those games were good in the preamble. Like they looked good and they all turned out pretty good too. I didn't watch 1 minute of football today, Sunday, when we're taping this. And that reflects where the Steelers are at. I'm just not interested.
How about hockey? How interested are you in that after the Penguins got hot again, then lost to Toronto the other night?
Well, it's like I wrote in my column for the Trib, which is already up. Every time you think the Penguins are really good, they remind you that they can be really bad. And there was a lot of stuff that happened in that Leafs game that had me insane. Like, you know, they get a real bad line change and concede a breakaway to Mitch Marner. But that's okay because he's not among the best players in, oh, wait a minute, he is, and he scored. That's 40 seconds into the game. Sid threw a fit on the bench, like kicking the boards, which we don't often see. So that shows you how bad that change was, which did involve him, I must say. And then, you know, you had a penalty in the first minute of the second period, a penalty in the first minute of the third period. And here's one that was egregious but didn't wind up in a goal against. But nonetheless, you gotta say, what the frig? 17 seconds left in the first period. Faceoff in the neutral zone in Toronto's end, okay? And Toronto gets a 2-1-1 off the faceoff. I have no idea how that happens. You know what you should be looking to do on that draw, Tim? Not give up a 2-1-1, period. So they just don't think. And it goes back to what I've so often said. They refuse to see themselves as they really are. They think it's 17, 16, 09, whenever, but not now. And you know, among their other weaknesses, their third line's terrible and their power play's terrible.
Where are you on Letang's play in that game against the Leafs, and where were you on his play during the win streak?
He started to play a little bit better during the win streak, but he's mostly flailed all year. That said, he's a real good defenseman who was great last year, great the year before that, has mostly had a great career, and I don't see any other option other than just wait for him to play out of it.
Did you see some moments? I've heard you use this phrase before. It's one that I agree with. It's one that I felt like I saw. And maybe I'm just putting too much on him because there were some of the things that went wrong against the Leafs. But were there some moments where DeSmith just looked too small in net again to you?
Yeah. In situations where you might not even think it. Case in point, the opening goal, the Marner breakaway. Now, that's a real good player. You know, who knows how to score in a breakaway, right?
Yeah.
But DeSmith's small, and he didn't get out on the shooter and didn't get his stick busy. Like, you know, there was a point where I thought Marner kind of showed him too much of the puck, and DeSmith could have poked it if he was willing to take a risk, right? But he played it safe, which translated into playing it small. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he should have stopped Mitch Marner on a breakaway. And I'm going to tell you for sure there should not have been a breakaway 40 seconds into a game, let alone one conceded to Mitch Marner. But it just could have been played better. And it does concern, as you said, that Casey DeSmith does know how to make himself big in the net.
Before we go, Mark, your opinions thus far on the World Cup. I watched all of the World Cup game between England and the U.S. I'm not a soccer fan, but I was intrigued. I watched a watch again when they play Iran on Tuesday. How did you feel the U.S. handled itself in that game against England, and how do you think things are going to go against Iran?
Well, first off, it's been a low-scoring World Cup, even by soccer standards. But I think it's been an exciting World Cup. I mean, it as I wrote in another trip column, soccer is the most popular game in the world. It doesn't need to proselytize. So you either like it or you don't like it. But the goals have been a little down. That U.S.-England game that was 0-0, I thought that was an extremely exciting game. Pulisic rattled the crossbar with his weaker left foot, on a chance that he created out of nothing. I thought he played an excellent game. I thought McKennie, the U.S. midfielder, he kind of whiffed on a chance in the box in the first half, but he was the man of the match. He really controlled the midfield against an English midfield that, is far more experienced and frankly, more talented. So, yeah, I thought the U.S., had slightly less possession, but had some real good counterattacking opportunities. I like the way they played, but by the same token, they have one goal in two games. They haven't manufactured many chances. And, they could if they tie Iran, they're out. They could go undefeated in group play and be out. But that would be no less than they deserve because you got to win.
To that end, when it comes to overtime, should they play extra time? Mark, not penalty kicks, but extra time in the pool stage, do you think?
No, absolutely not. A tie's a tie. It's a tournament in a compacted space of time. It's already very physically demanding. A tie's a tie. If that's the result, it could be a just one. It's not, occasionally in soccer you have the tie where, one team badly outplays the other or one team just parks the bus and plays defensively. I haven't seen much of that in the draws in these World Cup, but no, I see no reason to change it. And besides America, the rest of the world sees no reason to change that either.
Who's been the best team so far, do you think?
Boy, like nobody. I would have said Spain. They killed Costa Rica, but then Costa Rica bounced back and beat Japan, who had upset Germany. And then Spain drew with Germany. I don't know if there is a best team. If you made me say, I would say, the team that is 2-0 and was my pre-tournament favorite in France. I think Mbappe just looks unstoppable. You can't get near him out there. And sometimes that's all it takes is for one guy up front to take games over like he has so far.
Before we go, Mark, how is Brett Michaels? And tell us what you're going to see tonight as we tape this up.
Oh, Brett was great. Nothing but a good time, as the song goes. He has a big event coming up, a tour this summer, where he's going to play venues like Star Lake. In fact, specifically Star Lake on July 15th with his solo band, Night Ranger, Jefferson Starship. I want to say Sugar Ray, Mark McGrath, that guy. Kind of a concert that crosses, decades. So I'm looking forward to that. Brett's solo band is terrific. I mean, them guys, Pete and Norman and them, they're just terrific. And they got a female drummer, Tim Prod Mary, who's like a powerhouse. You got to check her out. She's unbelievable. She uses sticks the size of trees. It's just she is a killer. So he was really good. I mean, he's a great front man. The place was totally sold out, oversold a bit at the Palace Theater in Greensburg. That's like, I think, 1,100 people. So, yeah, it was great. Chatted with Brett for quite a while afterwards, me and Big Joe, who sells ads for the X and for DVE. So it was a real good time. And like I said, a good concert. Tonight I'm going to see Artemis Pyle, the former drummer for Lynyrd Skynyrd, who has like a, I guess you'd have to call it a Skynyrd tribute band because that's pretty much all he plays. But I've seen them before, and they're real good as well.
You've seen this version of the tribute band, so to speak, or is this another iteration of that?
Oh, no, I've seen this Artemis Pyle band before, yeah. I saw them on the Legends of Rock cruise I went on right before the pandemic.
When they do the Legends of Rock cruise again, who will they have left to do it? Because I thought you made a pretty good point the last time we talked about that, which is how many bands of these heritage rock groups are going to be left to do it?
Well, they'll do it without me because the two possibilities this spring, the it's actually called the Rock Legends cruise, the 10th iteration of that is the same weekend as my first deck hockey tournament I run in the spring. And then the heavy metal, I think it's called Monsters of Rock Cruise, is the same weekend as my big deck and roller tournament down at Neville Island at RMU Island Sports Center. So it's a shame, too, because Michael Schenker, UFO's guitar player, is on the second one. But I got to tell you, when I went on the last one right after the pandemic, and like Deep Purple played one show and then they all got COVID, and Randy Bachman from the Guess Who and BTO canceled because of COVID. Artemis Pyle canceled that one because of COVID. And like, if I'm going to, you know, not so much the money, but, you know, commit that amount of time to go on something like that, I want to know exactly who's going to be there. And I'm not much for excuses in that regard. So, but at any rate, there was no going this time anyway. I mean, Purple's going to be on the one again this time, but who knows what'll happen with them this time, you know?
Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell? You can, and all season long it's been the Steelers. We'll talk about it more Monday morning. Matt and Ben's, Unfiltered.
Tim, it makes you turn to the needle and the spoon. It's a trip to the moon.
And you can listen to Mark Monday through Friday at 105.9 The X, 3 until 6. This is another Madden Monday podcast.